To glow in the dark.
Glow in the dark.
Glow in the dark. Glow in the dark. Glow in the dark.
This is the Science Fiction Podcast, Glow in the Dark Radio. I'm your host, your writer and reader, Mike Luoma. Our music is by Juan Carlos Quatordio. And this is episode 450 of Glow in the Dark Radio. Been doing it just over 11 years. Began podcasting in September of 2006. And if you do the math, no, it hasn't been every week, but most weeks there's been a Glow in the Dark Radio podcast with some time off for vacations and holidays. And this week I've been planning for episode 450. But I also had something else come up on me. A new book coming out. All of a sudden, it's a big week. Vatican Assassin, the graphic novel, issue number one, is going to be coming out this Wednesday. Comixology Submit doesn't give you much warning on just when your book will come out on their platform. You get less than a week. And the last couple books I put up there, the last couple of issues, took about 3 months from their approval to publishing. Now, Vatican Assassin, issue one, has taken them a month. I was expecting to do a big release with this in December, figuring the 3 months, you know. Yet here we are, mid-October, and the same week as my big podcast. And the book's coming out next Wednesday, October 18th. Gives me a lot to celebrate and talk about. I should mention you can find my stuff online at glowinthedarkradio.com or mikeluoma.com, MikeLuoma. Find me on Facebook and Twitter under my own name there too, .com/MikeLuoma, MikeLuoma. There's also a Glow in the Dark Radio Facebook page, facebook.com/glowinthedarkradio. You can sign up for my mailing list on any of my sites too. I don't send out a lot, although I did send out a couple recently. And I'm going to send one out after this podcast because, you know, this is episode 450 and there's a new book coming out, so there's a reason to get in touch. Yep, sign up on any of my sites. And when you do sign up, you also get the free PDF, the free ebook, The Glow in the Dark Radio Guide to Life. And it's not an instruction manual or really a guide in any way, shape, or form. It's a compilation. It's an anthology. It's a bunch of previews of my stuff. It's an Alibi Jones short story you can't find anywhere else that has been incorporated into the novel, Alibi Jones and the Hornet's Nest. This is the only place you can find it, standing alone. There's a preview of Alibi Jones' vacation in there. Some of the Vatican Assassin graphic novel, preview art from Federico Guillen, Good Samaritan 2. There's part of the hard-to-find Vatican Assassin index in there, and it's a compilation you can only get, an anthology you can only receive when you sign up for this mailing list of mine. So it's what you call an incentive, I suppose. And again, you can sign up on any of my sites, glowinthedarkradio.com. MikeLuoma.com, the Facebook page, even on the blog, it's in the sidebar. In a way, it's funny, in celebrating this podcast and its 450th episode, and announcing that this full-color graphic novel, Part 1, first installment, is coming out this week, they kind of tie together. It's been a long trek for Vatican Assassin's birth as a full-color graphic novel. And that's basically what we've got happening this coming Wednesday. The novel Vatican Assassin came out in 2005. I put it out right as my 40th birthday was hitting, November of 2005. Now, I began this podcast the next year in September of 2006, and I did it to promote the novel, to promote Vatican Assassin, 11 years and 450 episodes ago. So here we are at episode 450, and I'm promoting a new release of Vatican Assassin in a new and different form. So it kind of all comes around. It's, I don't know, like I say, it's kind of tied together. So I thought, in honor of the release of the first installment of the graphic novel, issue 104, this coming Wednesday at Comixology and other retail sites online, in honor of that, we're going to hear Chapter 2 from Vatican Assassin. It's a good sample of Vatican Assassin. You really don't need to know anything beforehand. It doesn't require a lot of setup. It's the chapter where we meet the lead character, BC. A chapter that's part of the action in issue 1 of the comic book, of the graphic novel. You can hear the chapter on this podcast, and then read the comic book adaptation on Comixology, beginning Wednesday. And for regular listeners, we also have the next chapter of Alibi Jones and the Sunrise of Her, our regular presentation. I don't want to shortchange my loyal readers. Now, as I was saying, you don't need much setup for the Assassin sample. I will set up the story so far before we get into the Alibi Jones chapter, though, because that's just a little ways further in. But yes, up first, we're going to hear a sample of Vatican Assassin, a scene you will find in the new full-color first installment of the graphic novel out next week. Though, as this is the actual novel, this chapter goes into a bit more depth and detail. It's chapter 2 of the novel and audiobook, Vatican Assassin, coming up next on Glow in the Dark Radio. But first, some friends are here for the 450th episode celebration.
Hey, hello, Mr. Mike Luoma. We're...
Above and X.
Jamie.
And the Jared from Skinner Co., and we just wanted to wish you a happy 450th with Glow in the Dark Radio.
Happy 450!
What you are about to hear is highly classified. Pay attention and listen at all times. And most importantly, remember, this isn't about Zone 4. This is about the celebration of 450 episodes of Glow in the Dark Radio. And on behalf of all of us at the Zone 4 Podcast, Mike, congrats on reaching this milestone episode. You're an alumni of Zone 4, you'll always be part of the Zone 4 family, and our discussions on Cosmic Marvel would be nothing without you, man. So here's to 450 more, if you got it in you, and all we can say is hats off, congrats. Ladies and gentlemen, you are now leaving Zone 4.
Thank you, everybody. Now, here's a sample of Vatican Assassin, Chapter 2, on Glow in the Dark Radio.
This is not fun. This is not where I want to be right now. Well, who would want to be here? Sunk up to my knees in sewerage, recycled fluids, and God knows what else. In one of the waste transport tunnels under Reagan Station. Lunar Prime. Beautiful place. Try it on your next weekend getaway. It smells like steaming, decomposing garbage, shit, rotting tomatoes, sulfur, urine, dirty socks, disinfectant and vomit. What else do I smell? Shouldn't dwell on it. A wonderful bouquet. I'm trying to keep remembering that it's of vital importance that I be here doing this right now. Trying to remind myself I do the Lord's work, right? Yeah, right. That matters. That makes it different. Makes it special. The Lord's work. Who's Lord? Who am I kidding? They've got me, so I do this for them, for whatever reasons and excuses they make up. Sure, this is for the Lord. Whatever. God thinks I should kill and then wade through this crap, huh? God's pretty fucking twisted, then. The shit is filling into my boots and seeping up the legs of my pants. Not only does it smell like hell, it's burning my skin, too. It's a torture all its own. The big guy would probably say using this tunnel as an escape route is my penance. Even though I'm supposedly doing the Lord's work, I must atone for my sin. Forgive me, Lord, for assassinating the governor of the moon. But I did it for you. It's supposed to be easy this time. A quick hit, fast exit, quick change, and back into the hall before any grow wiser. It has to be flawless. The governor is a major target for the OPO. I got in and administered the toxin quickly and effectively. Arrived with the cardinal for the reception. Ducked out to use the bathroom after establishing my presence. Stepped past the men's room to the green room where the governor was waiting. Oh, so sorry, ma'am. Just lost. New to the place. By the way, I'm the new public relations aide to the Cardinal, Father Bernard Campion. Extend hand with small killbots on fingertips. Shake her hand and exchange the killbots, sending them off to do their work. Nice to meet you, Father. The men's room is right over there. You're about the fourth person today to do that. She laughed. Seemed nice. Too bad. She had to be eliminated for the greater good to save lives. This is what they tell me, anyway. She's UIN, or at least a sympathizer. We can't let her give them the moon. All the recent UIN attacks have been launched from Mars. The UIN only have a few stolen transspace ships that are powerful enough to make the trip between Earth and Mars fast enough to be effective. If she delivers Lunar Prime to them, they can launch attacks from here. They could bring a whole lot more of their less powerful ships to the moon from Mars and use the moon as a staging base for those ships. Then when they attack us, their ships won't have to travel so far, and they'll be able to use a lot more of them against us at once. We can't let her give them the moon. But, as the big guy would say, ours is not to question why. I did as I was instructed. I did the Lord's work. After I left the governor, I went back out and into the men's room and dropped down here through a maintenance hatch. Then it was supposed to be a quick trip down this access tunnel to the next hatch. But where's the next fucking hatch? It's here somewhere. Right here? No, just a random access panel. It's got to be here somewhere. It's in the plan. I'll find it, the plan. Let's see. When I find the hatch, I go up and out through a maintenance closet up off the main hall, near the restrooms on the opposite end of the conference hall from where the governor was. I'll change into my spare clothes I stashed near there and head back to the conference. I'll be seen coming back from the opposite direction from where the governor was, for misdirection's sake, strike up a quick conversation or two on the way back to establish my presence. Then I walk back into the hall into the chaos that has ensued. The plan. Man, this sucks. I made a fast exit, all right, nearly slid under the surface of this gunk when I slipped down the access hatch out of the bathroom. I knew I'd run into something down here, but this is disgusting. Glad I've got the change of clothes hidden near the other restrooms. I knew to expect some slime, but this... The next hatch should be right about here. Should lead to that closet and those other restrooms, but I don't feel it. Damn tunnel walls so smooth. This tunnel is carved right out of the lunar rock. Marble smooth wall, ceiling and floor, all rounded for easy slippage and falling on one's face or ass into the combined excrement of the moon's largest settlement. Oh joy, oh bliss. The glorious life of an agent of the Office of Papal Operations, BC, my boy. I can almost hear the big guy, the old man, in my head. See him in the robes of his office as he speaks words that seem somehow wrong, coming from such a blessedly adorned figure. She must be eliminated, my son, so that many more will not die. It is God's will, you see. You, as always, Father Campion, are merely his instrument. Instrument. Huh. I am feeling pretty played right about now. Light and sound break the dark silence. Alarms. Flashing white and red light. A voice saying something unintelligible. Shit, what's that? An alarm? Wonderful. Nice light show. Something's talking, too. Amplified, but still muffled. Some kind of warning. Great. Just great. Hallelujah, everybody. Too far away to see it yet, but it sounds like an automated security bug. No human lunar security cop would want to come down here. Ugh, the smell is getting worse. I didn't think that was possible. The security robot is getting closer. It's making a sizzling noise. Must be sweeping around the tunnel with lasers, superheating the sludge whenever it fires down into it. Oh no. Oh man. I can feel the waves of warm shit flowing down past my legs through the sludge, superheated by the security bug's lasers, heating up the shit. This just sucks. At least the announcement's getting clearer. There's a positive, huh?
Non-standard behavior, including unauthorized access to these maintenance tunnels, is to be reported, investigated, and resolved to the satisfaction of Lunar Security. Unauthorized access to this area is covered under the Lunar Emergency Powers Act and is classified as highly suspicious. Extreme force is authorized. Even automated extreme force has provided under the war codes. A general state of emergency has been declared by the Lunar Free Colony. Any non-standard behavior, including unauthorized access to these maintenance tunnels, is to be reported, investigated, and resolved to the satisfaction of Lunar Security. Unauthorized access.
The robot's getting closer. I can see the white strobe flashing, the red laser sweeping a webbed pattern around its perimeter. Man, I can hear the sludge bubbling and sizzling. It's definitely getting hotter. Still can't find the damn hatch.
Highly suspicious. Extreme force is authorized. even automated extreme force, as provided under the war codes. A general state of emergency.
Finally, there's the rim of the hatch. It's about chin high. Let's see what the sign on the hatch says. Access 14, Lunar Reclamation System Tunnel 28C. Ahoy me mateys, there she blows. In the nick of time, too. Damn goo is getting too hot, damn. Where's the control panel? There. Clicks, good sound. Whirring gears inside the hatch, and another click.
The hatch swings in. BC pulls himself up through the hatch as lasers from the security bot start to reach him. A red beam slices into the bottom of his right boot before he pulls it through the hatch.
Damn!
Red and white light flashes and splays chaotically across the hatch as he shoves it closed behind him. He's in a small space, a meter and a half square around with no visible ceiling. It's another tunnel carved right out of the lunar rock, this time leading up. There's a ladder carved into the wall in front of him. He climbs up easily in the light lunar gravity. There's another hatch in the wall at the top, just above the last rung of the ladder.
Locked.
He takes out a small silver cylinder, his hand laser. It glows red on the end as he fires it up. He focuses a short, intense beam and runs it along the seam of the hatch. The seam smokes as his laser cuts through it. He works his way around the hatch door. He braces himself, his back against the tunnel wall opposite the hatch, and kicks the hatch in. It falls with a soft thud.
That's wrong. Clang, yes. Soft thud, no.
He looks through the hatchway. The hatch has landed on something.
On someone, actually.
It's hard to see. Dim emergency lighting in here. It's a maintenance closet, a storage area. Toxicological suits and lockers, broken old cleaners piled off to one side. And a woman lying on the floor under the fallen hatch door. Is she all right? Is she unconscious? Why is anyone in here, anyway? He climbs through the hatch and drops to the floor next to the woman. She's wearing a uniform.
Oh, wonderful. A lunar security cop. All right, God. How about a little help here? Could you work out a helpful coincidence for a change? I'm not looking for a miracle, just a little help here. Come on. I wonder if that security bot sent out an alert. Shit, why else would she be in here?
He checks her pulse.
She's still alive, just knocked out. Should be fine. Looks like she took a good whomp on the head from this thing, though.
That's good. I do try to limit my killings to just one a day. Any more than that, and I'd begin to think it was becoming a bad habit. Huh, bit morbid. She's pretty. Like a sleeping Latino angel. Hope she stays sleeping for a while.
Damn, though, this is not in the plan. I'm leaving too big a footprint here now. She's bound to report this, even if she never sees me. And this is taking time I don't have. Gotta move.
He picks up the hatch and props it back up into its original position. He puts the hand laser on a slightly lower setting and runs it back along the seam around the hatch, fusing it back into place. The lunar security cop on the floor begins to stir as he finishes. He slides past her, across the room in his damaged shoes and soaked pants. She begins to move her head. BC reaches the closet exit and tries the door.
Locked.
He uses the hand laser again. The door's lock gives a good fight, but loses. BC burns through and pushes the door open. The door slides halfway open, then stops.
Shit. Well, it'll have to do.
He slides through.
If I'm doing your work, why won't you cut me any slack?
Huh? He's in a small side corridor off the main dome of Reagan Station, Lunar Prime. He edges down the right side of the corridor towards the atrium, tries not to look suspicious, covered in sewer sludge, and smelling as bad as he looks. He pulls his priestly collar off and pockets it.
No need to look that suspicious.
BC leans out of the corridor to visually scan the area ahead, the edge of the central atrium for Reagan Station. Groups of tall pines tower over, stretching to the starry roof of the dome.
Like a forest in a mall, pine needles and plastic. My bag should be just over by the trunk of that huge pine.
I don't see it from here. Good hiding job, let's hope. He ducks out of the corridor and into the first stand of pine trees in the atrium. He tries to nonchalantly search around for a sign of his bag.
It's not here? How can it not be here? Is this the wrong group of trees? No, right trees.
He pokes around under the pines and walks into a sprinkler hidden by the needles. He feels his left ankle twist the wrong way, and he starts to fall.
Ouch! Damn!
He breaks his fall and plops down onto the pine needles and grass. He sits, massages his ankle, and looks around for any sign of his bag.
Looks like it was stolen. There's an indentation in the bushes under the trees where I left it. It was here. It should be right here. These are the trees. Come on, any helpful coincidences? Who would steal a priest's clothes?
That was a sample of Vatican Assassin, Chapter 2, on Glow in the Dark Radio. Who would steal a priest's clothes? Get the rest of the story in the audiobook now on Audible, or pick up the ebook for free everywhere. Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Kobo, iBooks. It's my gateway drug for my science fiction. I give you the first taste for free. Again, that's at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Apple's, iBooks, Kobo, free, pretty much everywhere. The first Alibi Jones novel is free, too. I want to get you into that series. I give away the ebooks and hope you'll read on and support my work. Although, Amazon charges 99 cents for Alibi, for some reason. Can't get them to go free. We're into the second Alibi Jones novel on the podcast. Alibi Jones and the Sunrise of Her. We're about to get into Chapter 6, and here's what you need to know so far. Alibi is searching for a tiara known as the Sunrise of Her. It's an artifact, a relic that belongs to a cat-like race of aliens known as the Dakur. Their home planet is Her, H-U-R. And so this relic, this artifact, is called the Sunrise of Her. It's been missing since it disappeared during a raid on the Dakur equivalent of a wedding reception. These thugs, working for crime lord Rene Lavalure, hit the reception to grab Alibi's ex-girlfriend, Katie Ramsey. Lavalure claims to own her. The female Dakur who was getting married was killed in the raid, along with a few other Dakur. Alibi's friend, the Dakur Kit, who was getting joined, as the Dakur called getting married, he survived, but he blames Alibi for bringing the trouble into his life. Now, Alibi would like to be going after Katie, but Lavalure sent his right-hand man, this guy Peterson, to personally warn Alibi to back off, and said if Alibi landed on Lavalure's world Kismet, he was a dead man. So, instead, thanks to Alibi's Aunt Anita and her machinations, Alibi is searching for the Dakur's missing artifact, the tiara, the Sunrise of Her. He started at the station, the site, scene of the crime, where it all happened, the raid on the wedding reception, the joining ceremony. Paradisimo is the name of the place. It was a dead end. So then Alibi went to Rigel 4 and visited old family friend Krish, Dr. Krishnavurti, to see if he had any advice, any way to point Alibi in the right direction. He introduced Alibi to Richard Wentworth, one of the richest and most powerful men alive, and he's a very old man. Used to know Alibi's father, B.C. Now, Richard Wentworth himself didn't really help Alibi. But he did introduce Alibi to someone who might. Wentworth has sent Alibi down to Earth to meet a guy named Finder who, you guessed it, finds things. Maybe he can help Alibi find the Sunrise of Her. Let's find out. After more friends, say hello.
Hi, Mike. This is Professor Allen of the Relatively Geeky Podcast Network and Dorkness to Light. Congratulations on putting out your 450th episode of Glow in the Dark Radio. At this point, for most people, I'd say keep up the good work. But for you, Mike, keep up the great work.
This is Paul Lee Cooley, author of The Derelict Saga and The Black. You can find my work at shadowpublications.com. And I want to congratulate Mike Luoma on 450 episodes of Glow in the Dark Radio. Congrats, man.
Thanks, you guys. Now, here's Chapter 6 of Alibi Jones and the Sunrise of Her on Glow in the Dark Radio.
It's called the throne or travel chair of Inokata, the old hippie tells Alibi. It's an ancient alien chair, basically. I know about where it is, the name of the planet it's supposed to be on. Need you to find it there and bring it back to me. Alibi blinks, the bright beach sunlight hard on his eyes, even behind the dark sunglasses he picked up at the port. So if I find this throne thingy for you, you'll find the sunrise of her for me? Alibi asks. Did you not just hear me say that? Hey, Drex, what did I just say? Finder asks rhetorically.
Be nice to the kid, F-Man. He's new at this, the pilot says on Alibi's behalf, without looking up from his virgin pina colada.
In under 2 hours, Alibi has relocated from Wentworth's dimly lit outpost in space to a sunny beachside tiki bar in Argentina. Drex flew Alibi down to Earth after Finder agreed to meet with him, and led Alibi to the hippie's hangout.
Nice contrast. Gone from old man smell to inhaling coconut suntan oil, B.O., and cigarette smoke in a couple of hours. And as a bonus, I've got an old stoner feeding me bullshit. Well, hopefully not all bullshit.
Finder shakes his head and his unkempt mane.
Kids these days, Finder mumbles. Tell you what, kid.
The old man looks around the bar and then back at Alibi.
I don't feel like spewing too much more in front of the public, you know? Why don't us three go back to my pad? And I'll feel you in there.
Okay, Alibi agrees, a little uncertain. He looks over at Drex. The pilot doesn't look back over at him, but nods before he speaks.
You two go ahead, Drex says. I'll stay here. Gonna grab some lunch.
Are you sure? Alibi asks, a few questions loaded into one.
Positive. Not my job to tag along, the pilot says. And knowing my job is how I've kept it this long. Anyways, you'll be fine. Finder doesn't bite.
Alibi looks over at the old hippie. Finder grins an evil grin, showing off 2 rows of perfect gleaming pearly whites.
Drex don't know my girlfriends.
The man laughs.
Come on, kid.
He leads Alibi out of the bar and up into the city proper. They cross Av Peralta Ramos and begin weaving through the grid of city blocks of Mar del Plata. Alibi notices activity around a small brown stucco church as they walk to Finder's apartment house. 2 men in priest's clothing are face to face, gesturing angrily. A heated argument in Spanish carries over to him. Alibi doesn't know enough of the language to make out what the men are saying.
Ignore them,
Finder says in an offhand way when he sees Alibi distracted by the shouting.
Just Ignatius getting the what for from Santos.
Arguments in the NCC, huh? Alibi asks.
The NCC? Nah, Ignatius is an NCC. He's a new traditionalist. That's why Santos is yelling at him. Santos is NCC.
Neutra what?
New traditionalist.
What, you never heard of him?
Finder asks, surprised.
Nah, I don't get back to Earth much, Alibi explains. I thought there was just the new Catholic Church now.
Well, used to be. For a little while. But, you know, holy people,
Finder says, with a nod back at the 2 men still buzzing back and forth behind them.
Can't get more than a couple of them in a room before they start arguing. You know, the NCC's not traditional enough, or not progressive enough, or... Nah, all religious nuts.
Fuck 'em!
Finder shouts out the last 2 words, loud enough to be heard and understood in any language by anyone nearby. The 2 priests break off their invective to glare together over at Finder. He waves back at the 2. Their twin scowls are an almost comical duplicate reaction. Finder turns back to lead Alibi up the street. They make their way up to a small 2-room apartment on the 3rd floor of an old gray tenement. Finder unlocks the door and gestures for Alibi to follow him into his apartment. Alibi steps gingerly through the sloppy mess.
There are clothes, clutter, food, and trash strewn about the combination kitchen and living room. Alibi takes off his sunglasses. Through a half-open door, Alibi can see the bedroom is in no better condition.
"Here's my religion," Finder says, grabbing Alibi's attention back from the slop.
The man is holding up something in front of him.
"What is that?"
Finder lights a pipe and puffs on it. A sickly sweet smoke fills the room. He holds the pipe out to Alibi.
"Want some?"
he asks in a pinched voice, speaking and holding in smoke simultaneously.
"What is it?"
Alibi asks, waving the smoke away from his face.
"Ganja! Weed! Marijuana!"
Finder tells him, still trying to talk while also holding in smoke. Then Finder blows out a hazy cloud. "No thanks," Alibi says, waving away the offer and the smoke.
"Fine, be that way," Finder says,
sounding offended. He takes another hit off the pipe, then puts it down.
"Better now."
He looks around the apartment and then walks over to a nearby chair. He clears junk off it with one sweep of his arm.
"Here, have a seat," he says.
"Can't believe this guy's nickname is Finder. Look at this place. How could you find anything in here?"
Alibi looks down at the cushion before sitting down. An off-colored and yellowed splotch catches his attention.
"Yeah, that's an old stain," Finder says. "It's dry. Won't get any on you. Go ahead,"
Finder says, trying to reassure Alibi. Finder lifts another chair by the back and tilts it forward, dumping the piled-up clothes, food wrappers, and temp tabs from the wooden seat onto the ground. He turns the chair around to sit on it backwards, leaning his elbows on the chair's back. Alibi is still looking down at the stained cushion.
"Go on,"
Finder says.
"Sit down, Jones."
Alibi plops down into the cushioned chair with some reluctance.
"Nothing feels damp. Guess that's good."
"Don't be so prissy, kid," Finder chastises him. "You ain't gonna melt."
"Right," Alibi says. "But I don't want to catch anything either." Finder barks out a laugh.
"Ah, you're okay, kid.
So, this chair thingy you want me to find for you, what is it, and why me?"
"Right to the point, huh?"
Finder asks, taken a little aback.
"It's okay, it's okay. It's you because it's you. I find it's best not to question my instincts. You're the one who can find me the travel chair. I need to find it, and you found me, so it's you."
Alibi gives him a skeptical look. Finder rolls his eyes.
"Look, I don't know why I know that," Finder explains. "It's just something I know. My gift, if you want to call it that. You can find it because you have a gift too, I think. Again, my instincts. Don't know what that is. Something tells me you can deal with the laughing array, but then again, I'm not sure what that is either. Just words to me, you know. Part of the throne's legend."
"Great. This guy is so high, he's not making any sense."
Finder looks Alibi in the eye, glaring as if he heard Alibi speak his thoughts out loud.
"I know exactly what I'm talking about, kid," Finder protests. "This gift can kind of suck, too."
He holds up his pipe as if it's Exhibit A.
"This moderates it. Kind of helps."
Finder lights up and takes another hit off the pipe. He holds in the smoke for a moment, then breathes it out.
"So, as for the chair, that's a long story. You ready to listen?"
Alibi nods. "I'm listening."
"I'm listening, stoner. What the hell? Sometimes you learn the strangest of things in the strangest of places."
In his messy, dingy, two-room apartment in old Mar del Plata, Argentina, Finder relates to Alibi the strange tale of the travel chair of Inokata.
"It's also known as the chair of Inokata, Inokata's throne, and some other similar names. Finder thinks a moment. You're out there a lot, right? So I don't have to tell you about the Eldred, the ancient enemy, and all that.
Alibi nods his assent.
Good, good. So, you know, you can't land on most Eldred worlds. Probably won't surprise you to hear that a lot of times the things people want me to find for them are on those old worlds, huh?
Hadn't really thought about that, Alibi admits. But that makes sense, I guess.
Yeah, well, one of the other names they call this travel chair is Throne of the Ancient Enemy. And supposedly it's stashed on one of their old planets. One that some humans tried to colonize a while back. They called the planet Metcalf, after the family that landed there.
You said tried to colonize?
Yeah, it didn't go so well by our reports. Something drove all of them crazy, or worse. They went mad, most of them. Their minds were kind of white blank. They were left drooling, mindless, useless.
The travel chair did that? Alibi asks.
What the hell is this guy asking me to get into here?
Nah, no, there's supposedly this thing on Metcalf I mentioned. Something they call the Laughing Array that did it. Likely it's some sort of planetary defense mechanism left over by the Eldred. But, you know, like I said, my instincts tell me you might be able to deal with it.
Sounds like a great place to visit, Alibi cracks. This is where you expect me to go?
Ah, well, yeah, maybe. Can't be sure the travel chair is still there. The other problem is no one knows for sure which of about 100 possible Eldred worlds the Metcalfs actually landed on. We have no idea which one was actually named Metcalf. On top of that, there are other powerful interests looking for the travel chair, too.
Your competition? Alibi asks.
Well, some. My clients aren't above hiring more than one person to find what they're looking for. And, word is, not all the ones hunting it are human. Some dangerous aliens are supposed to be looking for it, too. Rumor has it more of the ancient enemy have returned.
Finder says, with a chill in his voice.
And that idea ain't so far-fetched. What with that Dolome showing up during the last war, he was one of them. Did you know that?
Yeah, I'd heard that. Wait a sec, Alibi says. Just what are you asking me to do here?
Is it Azamet? Is he looking for this thing too?
Look, kid. Finder gets a little exasperated. The thing you want is pretty fucking valuable. You gotta find something comparable or it all breaks down, you see?
See? Not really. From what Wentworth told me, your travel chair is worth a lot more than the sunrise of her, Alibi protests.
Wish it was, kid, Finder tells him. But your tiara there became the prize in a pretty nasty bidding war between a couple of ruthless and powerful interests.
The old hippie chuckles.
Inflation's a bitch.
Alibi scowls. What else can you tell me about this thing? He asks Finder.
You gonna go through with this, kid?
Finder looks for confirmation.
Can't tell you more unless I know for sure you're in.
Alibi looks the man in the eye, searching for something.
Can I trust him? Do I have a choice?
You're thinking awfully hard, kid. I can smell the wood burning,
the man cracks. Yeah, I don't think that's me smoking. Alibi snaps back.
Well?
Finder stares him down. Alibi stares back. He makes up his mind. I'm in, Alibi says.
Can't believe I'm agreeing to do this.
I'll find this stupid thing. Tell me more, Alibi urges. Finder continues to stare him down for a moment, still assessing him.
Or trying to remember what he was saying. Can't be sure. Whatever.
Finally, Finder continues.
All right. Some say it's a weapon. Some say it's a toy. Whatever. At any rate, the travel chair was a device of some kind used by the ancient enemy. And according to the legends, the travel chair let the ancient enemy travel long distances almost instantaneously. Some legends say the throne lets the user be two places at once, and see into other beings' souls. Others say the chair used to let them travel by thought.
Travel by what? Alibi asks. Thought?
What, you deaf or something, kid? Yeah, by thought. Ever hear of astral projection? I'm thinking it was probably something like that.
Astral projection?
Using your mind to travel? You wouldn't believe the latent power of the brain, kid.
Actually, you'd be surprised, Alibi says, thinking of Azumet and his oily touch on Alibi's mind last year.
Double doors closing.
Finder starts. He gives Alibi a strange look.
What'd you just do? Finder asks.
Nothing, Alibi lies.
Yes, you did. You closed up, Finder says, his eyes widening. You went dark, kinda. Sort of disappeared. Never seen that before.
What do you mean?
Can't tell what you can find anymore, Finder says, shocked. It's like you all went blank or something.
The man grows cold, eyes Alibi with sudden suspicion.
What are you?
Double doors open.
Double doors open. Alibi makes a serious effort to visualize the heavy doors in his mind opening back up to Finder.
Ah.
Finder looks puzzled. Is that better? Alibi asks.
Whoa, weird, yeah. I can see. You can find it again. But how did you do that?
It's a trick someone showed me, Alibi says. I pictured doors closing in my head, supposed to protect me.
Works better than it should. Finder mumbles. Kind of freaked me out.
You are the one who brought up the power of the mind, Alibi points out. Your own gift is pretty damn freaky too, so don't get all crazy at me. Finder frowns, but shakes his head and shakes it off.
Okay. Where was I?
Finder asks. You were talking about what the travel chair could do, Alibi tries.
Oh yeah, well, obviously, we don't know if the thing would work for us the same way. From what I understand, the ancient enemy were wired up kind of differently than we are, even though we kind of look like they did.
So I've heard, Alibi says.
By one of them. But Finder here doesn't need to know that.
Really? So you know. But it used to let them travel by thought and do things, too. With their minds at interstellar distances, pretty wild.
Alibi grows suspicious. How do you know so much about it? Alibi asks.
My clients briefed me, he says, matter of fact. They understand I have to know a lot about the thing I'm supposed to find for them, or I won't be able to locate it.
Oh.
Don't even think about asking who my client is, Finder snaps before Alibi can ask. It's all confidential.
Good to know, Alibi mumbles. Another question occurs to him. So, do you know who this guy Inokata was? Finder looks relieved at the change of subject.
He was one of them, Finder says. One of the ancient enemy. Some kind of combo spy and scientist, I think.
Guess that would make sense if he'd make a chair like that, huh? Alibi comments.
The only other thing I know about him is that he was killed as a traitor, Finder says,
getting a little grimmer.
That's pretty clear in every version of the legend. Somehow he used the chair against the leader of the ancient enemy, and they had him killed. Then they decided the chair was too dangerous and they buried it away.
Wait, you want me to find something that the ancient enemy themselves supposedly buried and hid away because it was too dangerous, even for them?
Well, Finder says, sounding a little sheepish, yeah, I guess, now that you put it that way.
Great. Finder can tell Alibi little else about Inokata and the travel chair. After a few minutes, the old hippie takes a few more hits off his pipe and stands back up.
All right, let's go, he says.
Finder shepherds Alibi out of the grungy apartment, down the stairs, and along the road, past the now quiet little church, as they make their way back to the tiki bar on the beach. Drex is waiting for Alibi at the bar, watching news on the display screen in the corner. As Alibi enters, he looks over and waves. Finder is leaving before Alibi can turn around. Hey, wait a second, he calls after him. The man stops, half turning back.
What?
What do I do when I find it? Finder turns all the way back, once again grinning his evil grin.
I like that you just said when, he tells Alibi. Let Wentworth know when you find it. He'll know how to get in touch with me.
I won't be able to find you here?
Well, the thing about being finder is that you have to be pretty good at not being found yourself.
The old hippie tries to sound mystical.
I don't know where I'll be when that time comes, you see?
Sure, I guess. So, what then? We'll make an exchange or something?
Yeah, something like that. We'll work it out when the time comes.
The man turns back and walks away down the beach. Alibi walks back into the bar.
Yeah, all set?
Drex asks. Yeah, I'm gonna... Drex cuts him off.
No offense, Mr. Jones, but I don't want to know.
Ha, not your job? Alibi asks with an impish grin.
You got it,
Drex confirms.
Anyways, all set?
Sure, let's go, Alibi says. The two men leave the bar, heading back to the small local port where the ship is parked.
Back to Wentworth Station?
The pilot asks him as they walk. I don't think so, Alibi says. I want to check in with him and let him know how it went, but I don't think I need to bother Mr. Wentworth in person again. Any chance you could bring me home to Cat's Eye? If you can't, Ceres would be fine.
I can get you home, Drex says.
We'll call Mr. Wentworth on the way to Cat's Eye.
The travel throne of Inokata, eh?
Wentworth says, repeating back what Alibi has just told him. His voice sounds tinny over the comm through the small dashboard speakers on Drex's ship. Wentworth called as soon as Drex checked in post-takeoff. After informing Wentworth that Finder wanted him to be their middleman, Alibi had to tell Wentworth what Finder had him looking for.
Huh.
What? Alibi tries.
Not one of my requests,
Wentworth admits.
Just wondering who wants it.
Alibi gets a sick feeling in his gut. Do you think it's him? Lavalier? Alibi asks.
Could be,
Wentworth admits.
Though I don't think it's likely. Seems too esoteric, I suppose. For Lavalier, it's not something he can eat, fire, or fuck that limits its use to the man.
So you don't think it's for him?
Probably not.
Good, Alibi says.
Neither of us wants to see you helping him, Alibi Jones,
Wentworth assures him over the comm.
Self-entitled new money. Bah, I'm not a fan.
I never want to work for that pig, Alibi says, too loud as he grows angry. Not even indirectly.
Ah, the voice of the young,
Wentworth says calmly.
Indirectly, Alibi Jones, we all end up working for the people we hate. Isn't that right, Drex?
The pilot chuckles. Sorry, Mr. Wentworth, Drex says. It was all blah, blah, blah to me until I heard my name just then. Isn't what right?
I should know better, Drex,
Wentworth says.
Never mind. See you when you get back here.
Wentworth lets out a little laugh.
Drex would have been a fine diplomat if he hadn't become a pilot. Don't you think, Jones?
Not really.
I guess so. Alibi agrees for the sake of expedience.
And Jones?
Yes, Mr. Wentworth.
If you need my help as you search, let me know. I have some pull with people.
Why should you help me?
I have my reasons,
the old man says with another chuckle.
Goodbye for now, Jones. Wentworth out.
His reasons? He said he doesn't want the throne for himself. If he did, why would Finder make him the middleman? They must have another deal going on. Sounds like Finder has multiple deals going at all times. So what part am I playing?
Alibi sits pondering his questions in silence as the old ship transitions in and out of Transpace on its trip to Cat's Eye, Alibi's home base. Drex clears the ship to land at the main port as they approach the planet.
You got quiet,
Drex observes. That's funny coming from you, Alibi snaps back. Just thinking.
Sometimes, Drex says, it's better not to worry too much about what Mr. Wentworth is up to. Isn't healthy.
Funny. Lots of people I don't know are suddenly worried about my health, Drex. Alibi cracks with a laugh.
Maybe the universe is trying to tell you something,
Drex points out.
Maybe you should listen. Anyways, we're almost there. Coming up on Cat's Eye.
That was Chapter 6 of Alibi Jones and the Sunrise of Her on Glow in the Dark Radio. So now Finder has Alibi Jones finding things for him. The travel chair of Inokata? Okay. We'll head to Cat's Eye with Alibi in Chapter 7 of Alibi Jones and the Sunrise of Her on our next episode of Glow in the Dark Radio. Hope you'll be with us again next time. This is a special 450th episode, special edition of Glow in the Dark Radio. We heard our usual installment in our ongoing serialization of Alibi Jones and the Sunrise of Her. And we heard a sample of Vatican Assassin, and issue number one of Vatican Assassin, the graphic novel in full color, comes out this coming Wednesday at Comixology, featuring the very scene we heard on this show, and some more stuff too. There are more details and all the links you need at glowinthedarkradio.com or mikeluoma.com, MikeLuoma.com. You can get Vatican Assassin as an ebook for free pretty much everywhere. There are paperbacks through Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and other online retailers. The audiobook is at Audible. Alibi Jones, the novel, the first in that series, is free. The ebook at Barnes & Noble and Kobo and iBooks and other spots. 99 cents at Amazon. Of course, it's free to subscribe to this podcast, and I hope you do. You can subscribe to my mailing list as well on any of my sites. There are boxes to sign up and subscribe. And remember, when you do, you get a free ebook, a PDF, The Glow in the Dark Radio Guide to Life. Just for joining the mailing list, it's an exclusive. And that is all for this 450th episode of Glow in the Dark Radio. As always, our music is by Juan Carlos Quatordio. And I'm your host, your writer and reader, Mike Luoma. Thank you again for listening to Glow in the Dark Radio.